who has not announced themselves yet?
This is Jeannie Doray in Chicago.
Hi, Jeannie. It's Virginia.
Hi, Virginia.
And anyone else?
Rich Gardner.
Rich. Hey, Rich.
It's Carolyn from Palm Springs.
And before you got on, Virginia, there's me, there was Rob, Russell Green. Somebody was getting off.
Priscilla Bassett, Sullivan County, New York.
Okay.
Anyone else who has not announced themselves?
Michael. Andrea.
Andrea Miller?
Yeah.
Hi, Andrea.
Eight.
And there was Jeff from Vermont.
Yep.
Michael Eisencher in Oakland.
Hi, Michael. Sally?
Yes, sorry. Sally Weiss, Western Massachusetts.
Tom Baxter.
Tom, and where are you from?
Tallahassee.
Hi, guys. Bill Honigman, Dr. Bill, PDA California State Coordinator.
Hi, Dr. Bill.
Hi.
Okay, well, this is Virginia Hoffler. I'm the co-chair of End Wars and Occupations for Progressive Democrats of America. I want to welcome everyone to the call. Unfortunately, our guest speaker, Teddy Miller, is not going to be able to join us tonight. At the last minute, he did have to cancel. I did talk to him on the phone regarding these legislative issues that we wanted to discuss tonight. And I just want to say, I'll go over these first, and then we're going to have Sally Weiss give us an update on Jobs Not Wars, and Sandy Davies will be talking to us more about what's going on in Iran, and hopefully about the move to repeal the authorization for the use of military forces in Afghanistan. So we have a lot to cover tonight, so I'll just get right into my conversation with Teddy Miller, who is Barbara Miller's legislative assistant in Washington, D.C. I asked him about the three pieces of legislation, H.R. 200, Responsible End to the War in Afghanistan Act, and specifically asked him, you know, it had a different number in the last Congress, and we got close to 85 co-sponsors at that point. And I said, what does it take to get a hearing on this? And basically, he said, it's not about numbers. It's not about quantity. It's about quality. We need more members of the House Armed Services Committee and members of the Foreign Affairs Committee to sign on as co-sponsors. Now, one of the tasks we need everybody to do on these bills is to go to your website and just Google House Armed Services Committee members, and it's very easy to get a list and find out if someone from your state is on that committee, whether they're Republican or Democrat. We really need some Republicans to sign on also in order to get a hearing. And this is the legislation he believes we have the most chance of getting a hearing on if we can get a couple of Republicans to sign on, and specifically Republicans from these committees. So this is going to be our action request of you tonight, is to look these up and see if there's somebody from your state on this committee and give them a call to try to get them to co-sign. And please let us know if you get them to sign on, and so we can keep checking with Teddy and Barbara Lee to see how far we are and keep pushing. And if you're working on one, so please let us know, and we can help by by possibly contacting other people and peace activists we know in your area. And we need to reach out to all the peace activists across the country to do this. So that goes for all the legislative bills that we mentioned on our agenda, including H.R. 783, Prevent Iran from Acquiring Nuclear Weapons and Stop War Through Diplomacy Act, and H.R. 808 to establish a Department of Peacebuilding. So he said, that last one, he said, is probably not going to get a hearing. It's going to be very difficult to get some Republicans to sign on to that. So he recommended that we really make the push for H.R. 200. Now, since we sent out the original agenda, the repeal, the authorization for use of military force came out, and we do have Walter Jones on the Armed Services Committee who has already signed on to that. So this one is already moving pretty well, and we need to get a lot more on these. I don't know if there's anybody on the line from Michigan, but there is a Congressman Justin Abbas from Michigan who's pretty much a libertarian, and we'd like to try to get him signed on, and Bruce Bailey from Iowa. These are names that Teddy gave me and said we hope we can push to get these people to sign on. We think we have a chance with them, and we need to push hard on that. Does anybody have any questions on these bills?
I would just add, the authorization for the use of military force bill, that is H.R. 198. That is also Barbara Lee's bill. And, you know, it was sort of low on our priorities until the New York Times ran an editorial on Sunday basically saying what Barbara Lee's bill says, which is repeal the authorization for the use of military force. So that is why we included it on our invitation to the call tonight. You know, when the New York Times editorial board comes out for something that we want but we're not really pushing, that's really an opportunity to move it up in our priorities and really make a push on it. So anything that anybody can do to get some more support for H.R. 198 and take a look at that editorial in Sunday's New York Times to repeal the authorization for the use of military force.
Right. Okay.
Virginia, how would we reach you?
How would we reach me?
Uh-huh.
Oh, you can reach me at Virginia H. at pdamerica.org. Please let me know. So we're just going to keep moving so we can have some discussion at the end if we have any more questions on any of these subjects. So, Sally, would you like to give us an update on Jobs Not Wars campaign?
Yes, the Jobs Not Wars campaign. I hope that everyone on this call is already signed it. If you haven't, then the website is www.jobs-not-wars.org. At this point, there are 36,000 signers, and there are a lot of endorsing organizations, 145. Some are big organizations, and some are small local groups. And we're glad to have all sorts of groups like that. On February 13th, about a month ago, the petition was presented in a kind of a lobby day, and the official rep that I think took it because he was actually not a staff member but a rep himself was Jerry Nadler of New York. And many other offices got a big packet with a lot of information. I'll go a little bit into how this petition came about. There are for several years, there's been a group of national peace representatives that meets, that is met every 2 weeks on a phone call similar to this, and it was called the Afghanistan Working Group. And that's a big task to stay with the war in Afghanistan and try to figure out strategy. And then late in the summer, when, of course, the whole country was preoccupied with the presidential and the congressional elections, we, among others, probably everyone on this call, saw how discombobulated Congress seemed to be and how, in a way, how much worse it was going to be after the election, because there was this thing which, you know, we kept hearing about the fiscal cliff and the fiscal cliff. You know, every time you turn around, that's what you heard, which seemed to be to us on that call and to me, and again, many on this call right now, probably know that that's kind of an invented thing to make austerity happen in this country, like austerity was made to happen in Europe, in a sense, maybe when it didn't need to, in order to cut services to people. So we talked among ourselves, and there's a person on this line tonight, Michael Eisenscher, who is the executive director of U.S. Labor Against the War. And he came to us, I think it was in September, Michael, wasn't it, and said to the people on this Afghanistan working call, why don't we come up with a plan to say this austerity is not necessary, and especially it's not necessary because we're anti-war activists, and we know that the real amount of money in this country goes to the Pentagon. And of course, we were all, you know, we were all nodding our heads in our own houses and thinking, yeah, that's right. And so Michael went to work and wrote us up a petition. And we got ourselves a web designer, and pretty soon the petition was online so people could sign it. And that all happened really before the month of November was over. So the petition's been on there for about 4 months. And as I said last, a month ago, it was officially presented to Congress. It is still open for signing. And we feel like the Jobs Not Wars group, the planners, kind of feel like we need to stay with this now because, look, we're into, the sequester sort of is over, but it's being, in my opinion, reincarnated now in the budget. I have not had time today to look at Paul Ryan's budget, which I understand came out today. But what I do know is that tomorrow at noon there will be an official presentation of the Congressional Progressive Caucus's budget. Now, this is, I think, was it almost 2 years ago now, we had something called the People's Budget, which is actually the title that I like the best. But the Congressional Public, the CPC, as we call in shorthand, I doubt if anyone on this line I have to explain what the Congressional Progressive Caucus is. But they are, they have, I'll say this for them. Within the peace movement, there are people who feel that the leadership of the Progressive Caucus has never been stronger than it is right now. You have Keith Ellison and Raul Grijalva as the co-chairs. And I've just noticed that every time an issue comes up, one or the other of them is, at least in our part of the media, you know, our blogosphere or something, they put out a press release and it gets onto at least my listserv. I hope it gets onto yours. And so the Congressional Progressive Caucus is really moving these days. And so just today, this afternoon, I got the executive summary of what will be presented tomorrow. So to me, the beauty of the people's budget, as I still think of it, is that it really takes all the different parts of our government, our federal budget, and it makes sense to me, and I think even to people that don't study this as much as some of us do, in terms of it balances the priorities of the country in a way that somehow have gotten way out of hand in Congress. And so I'm really looking forward to the presentation at noon tomorrow. And in fact, Jobs Not Wars now considers it our job to try to get more than the usual amount of people to vote for it. Now, the voting, this is how the voting will be. It will be presented tomorrow, and in a very short period of time, maybe as early as next Wednesday on the 20th or the following day on the 21st, it will become, this budget will become an amendment to Paul Ryan's budget. And we hope for it, with the help of everyone on this phone call and all the other phone calls and all the other organizations, to have not just 70 CPC members, but to have as many as 100 people voting for, House members voting for it, maybe over 100, because if it's, I think at about 112 or so, you then have a majority of the Democrats in Congress, and that says something to an administration which is a Democratic administration. So I hope that PDA will be putting out a little bit more material about the budget as soon as we know it fully tomorrow, and that each of us, you know, as usual, will get on the phone to our own House member's office and make them, first of all, aware of it and what you think of it, and that they have become very, you know, they're going to be present next Wednesday or Thursday, and they're going to vote for it. So, again, if you want to know more about the Jobs Not Wars campaign, then I'll give the website address. Again, it's www.jobs-not-wars.org. Another entity had Jobs Not Wars, so we had to put the dashes in order to, you know, have a website that hadn't already been claimed. And I'll just second the previous speaker, Sandy Davies, said something about the War Powers Act. I want to say there was a lot of excitement around our house. On Sunday, we do actually go out and get the New York Times every Sunday. Otherwise, I have it online. And to see the New York Times come out against the War Powers Act to say that, you know, okay, this country got 9/11 happened, and Congress felt it had to make a War Powers Act. The trouble was that the language of it was very broad, and it has been taken advantage of by President Bush, and I'm afraid even by Barack Obama. And it gets to be what we in the peace movement call the endless war, you know, where we just seem to go from one war to the next, and it's time for Congress to take back its authorization and take it really its constitutional place as the entity that's supposed to declare war, not the president. Okay, so that's what I have to say.
Okay, thank you, Sally. So the next step is going to be to watch out for this budget announcement to come out and get on the phone to our representatives. Okay, so our next speaker is Sandy Davies.
Virginia?
Yes?
Hi, sorry to interrupt. It's Dr. Bill. Can I just make one quick comment on what Sally just reported?
Sure.
Thanks. Yeah, sorry to interrupt. Sally, that was an excellent presentation on the budget movement. And from the calls I've been on in the last couple of days, you did a really good job of describing that. I would just like to add that, you know, from the PDA's perspective, actually the name of this, it's a tough sell because, you know, anything with Ryan's name on it is going to be tough to our people, but it is an amendment that would basically undo all the austerity parts of the Ryan budget, which is most of the Ryan budget. But it's referred to as the back-to-work budget amendment. So so that's kind of, I don't think you mentioned that name specifically, but when people see it in their email, you'll see it being referred to as the back-to-work budget amendment. And it will not have a bill number. So that's another source of confusion, but it does everything that Sally said. It certainly reestablishes priorities, not just away from you know, the obscene defense spending, but also toward spending on human needs, like in healthcare and in environmental preservation. So it really is excellent. We had a terrific response of PDA folks on a national call this morning. And so I think there's a whole lot of movement for this action in Congress. So, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bill. And Michael Eisenter, would you like to add anything to that?
Well, one minor correction. We're now up to 177 organizations, not 145. And I think Sally did a pretty good job of describing it. What we're now doing is getting organizations that endorse the petition to reaffirm their desire to continue in the campaign, and we'll be working very hard to mobilize support for the back-to-work budget. As Dr. Bill said, it's an anti-austerity budget, no cuts to any social programs. It will lower unemployment to 5% in 3 years and cut $4.4 trillion from the deficit in 10 years, $987 billion cut in military spending over 10 years. It really does a lot of the things that most progressives want done and none of the bad things that everybody else seems to want done. So we're basically saying you can't get to Prosperity Street by taking the austerity road.
All right, that's a great slogan there. Okay. All right, so thank you, Michael. And we'll move on to foreign affairs with regarding Iran with Sandy Davies. Sandy?
Yeah, hi, everybody. So, yeah, just kind of following on from talking about the authorization for the use of military force in 2001, essentially we, you know, we're just careening from one crisis to another as a result of that authorization, which in fact does not authorize what the Obama administration claims. It actually authorized the use of military force against any person or group that was somehow connected to or was somehow responsible for the attacks of September the 11th. And as the former John Bellinger, the former chief State Department legal advisor under the Bush administration, has pointed out, the Obama administration is now using that to go after all kinds of people that had absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the September the 11th attacks. And there really is no basis for that. But essentially, as we sit here at the beginning of 2013, and you know, we really try to keep up the pressure to get all the troops home from Afghanistan, we do have these two other crises threatening to become the next American war. and I'm talking, of course, about Iran and Syria. And I think there's a real question hanging over all of us, over the whole peace movement this year, as to whether either of these is, in fact, in the course of 2013, going to blow up into another U.S. military fiasco. Now, I think probably, in fact, the Obama administration is going to do its best to not let that happen, to in fact just continue to ratchet up the pressure on both the Assad regime in Syria and the revolutionary government in Iran. In Iran, we now have had a relatively positive meeting in Kazakhstan between the P5 plus one, which is the permanent members of the UN Security Council plus Germany, meeting with Iran. What made this a more positive meeting than previously is that the U.S. did not come in with a precondition of a non-negotiable demand for Iran to completely give up its legal right under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty to enrich uranium. So the U.S. has essentially dropped its demand for zero uranium enrichment in Iran, and Iran has responded to that by engaging with the P5 plus one to see where this can go. At the same time, the U.S. has not in any way indicated to what extent it would be willing to roll back these incredibly punitive sanctions on Iran, which are causing untold misery and economic hardship to all of the 75 million people in Iran. We had Joe Biden giving a speech to AIPAC last week, in which he, between a lot of very hawkish statements, he did actually make a case for diplomacy. In a sense, he defended the administration's decision to continue with this diplomacy. However, at the same time, we had General Mattis, the head of CENTCOM, testifying before a congressional committee and saying that the goal of all of this is to, quote, bring Iran to its knees. And at another point, he said bring Iran to its senses, but he also said bring Iran to its knees. And so I think we have to really understand this as very similar to U.S. policy under the Clinton administration towards Iraq. While the Obama administration may not want to be the one that actually launches a full-scale war against Iran, they are, as the Clinton administration did with Iraq all through the 90s, trying to ratchet up the pressure, impose more and more punitive sanctions, But I think there are some positive things here. The U.S. military does seem to have at this point concluded that they do not have a good military option for an attack on Iran. And then we have the engagement with the P5 plus one, And as with Iraq, we essentially have countries like Russia and China and Germany engaged, but going along with this, going along with the sanctions, really to try and keep things in play and not create a situation where the U.S. and Israel decide to go it alone and attack Iran. But it's hard to see how this is going to play out. But I think it's very important that the Obama administration feel that a new war with Iran is really unacceptable to the American people. Even though Obama has embraced and expanded a lot of Bush's doctrines and policies with regard to the use of special forces and drones around the world, it is important to the Democrats to maintain their position in American politics as the more dovish of the two parties. And I do not think Obama wants to, wants to blow that. And so, but I think what's going to be really critical is what the Obama administration perception is of where the people are. And of course, that is where we come in. You know, we really have to take every opportunity to get people calling Congress, calling the White House, get people in the street, get articles in the media, and to really maintain the peace movement in this country in a way that the administration and members of Congress do feel that we exist and that we are a force to be reckoned with. And so, you know, we really have to take every opportunity, and that's why we kind of jumped on that New York Times editorial on the authorization for the use of military force on Sunday. Now, we have this other situation in Syria, which is an absolute crisis. You know, the UN is estimating 60, 70,000 people have been killed. It may be more than that. And the West, the U.S. and its allies are really prepared to prolong and escalate this crisis, you know, seemingly to an unlimited extent to try and get rid of Bashar al-Assad. The British government today is talking about arming sending weapons to the Free Syrian Army. And the country is completely falling apart. The UNICEF today published a report talking about the children of Syria as a lost generation. This generation of children in Syria is just going to be so traumatized that they will be damaged for life. This is really very, very much a result of U.S. policy. Since late 2011, Philip Giraldi, ex-CIA officer, was reporting that unmarked NATO planes were flying in weapons and fighters from Libya, and the U.S., along with France and Britain, and our monarchist friends in the Persian Gulf really undermined Kofi Annan's efforts to bring a political resolution to this. But again, as with Iran, the Obama administration just seems to be willing to keep turning up the pressure. They don't seem to want to get directly involved. These are real crises. People are talking about Syria as really turning into another failed state like Somalia, with no effective government at all, and just complete chaos and misery and poverty for its people. And we've seen in the past that our leaders are willing to allow that to happen to other countries, willing to do that to other countries, you know, rather than have a stable government that is an opponent or an independent and not subservient to the U.S. So so I think on all of this, we really just need to, through all our different, all the different things that we all do and the different things we're all involved in, we really need to just keep making, doing whatever we can to make our voices heard. I have an article that will be coming out on Alternet sometime between now and the 19th and 20th about Iraq, and it basically is just talking about the fact that the American crimes in Iraq, from aggression to torture to illegal rules of engagement to mass slaughter of civilians, have really 10 years later gone unacknowledged and unpunished. And we live in a country that is heavily propagandized, and we really need to just keep doing whatever we can to make our voices heard on each of these issues, and seize every opportunity to do that. And I think Jobs Not Wars is great. I think the back to work budget is great. All in terms of redefining our country's priorities. I think we had a problem, I think, with the marquee PDA endorsement that we didn't actually make a point of bringing up the war and peace issues with Markey, but he has a fairly good record on that stuff anyway. We just have to keep finding ways to make our voices heard and not let this administration and our members of Congress believe that continuing war, continuing record military budgets are something that they can get away with. And that's about all I have to say.
All right. Does anybody have questions for Sandy?
No, this is Jeff. I do have a comment, though.
Okay.
As I hear a lot of the very worthwhile thoughts and likewise in other meetings and functions I've attended over the last couple of months, I can't help but think that we're all missing something. So I'd be interested in other people's reactions. And I'll give the side note first. The side note is Obama is not even close to who he portrays himself to be, particularly for many of us that maybe even voted for him and helped to fund his first campaign. But when we talk about Congress and persuading them, it's a nice thought, but we need to think about another approach. Other than a few members of Congress, they don't care what we the people think. 100% of we the people could want something. They no longer work for us. They work for the corporate and banking interests that have taken over our government. And this insidious, incestuous set of relationships that's permeated down to all levels in government, including the Supreme Court, as well as the executive branch, is what we're up against. And I think, yes, keep doing what we're doing, but somehow we have to find a way to take power back. And I'd be curious on other people's feelings on this. If we don't find a way of taking power back and putting people in office, all the lobbying and all the work we attempt to do falls on deaf ears. And I appreciate other people's reactions to my comments.
Well, this is Sandy. I would say, I have a member of Congress here in this district in Miami who's now a second-term member of Congress. She actually quit the Progressive Caucus sometime last year. But I do find that, you know, by through our, you know, what we used to call brown bag lunch vigils and what we now call Educate Congress letter drops that we do with PDA, and through calling her DC office, establishing a relationship with her legislative director, you know, she just signed on last week to H.R. 200 to get out of Afghanistan, and H.R. 505, which is the Progressive Caucus, the Balancing Act, the Progressive Caucus response to the fiscal cliff. I totally agree with you that Congress is completely corrupt. We have, you know, as people say, the best Congress money can buy. But at the same time, you know, when we look at the success of groups like the NRA and AIPAC, by mobilizing people, they manage to have an influence completely, absolutely beyond the proportion of the population that they represent. And we can do the same. And I think we represent a lot more people, really. Anyone that you talk to that, you know, that works in a congressional office will tell you that, you know, they do register how many people call up on a particular topic. They do register how many emails they get on a particular topic. And the part of our problem here is that, you know, we have Medea Benjamin down here a few weeks ago, speaking at a PDA meeting and doing a couple of events here in Miami. And she said that in 2008 and 2009, Code Pink's email membership list went from 300,000 down to 130,000. They had so many people unsubscribe because people were either putting their faith in Obama, people were burned out on, you know, after protesting Bush, and you know, people in this country feel powerless. People feel that people feel that whatever they have done up to now has not worked, and so a lot of people have just stopped doing it, and you know, and that becomes a self-fulfilling thing. And when people stop calling their members of Congress because they think they're not listening, when people stop showing up at rallies because they think it doesn't make any difference, then we essentially cede the our country to.
But that's my point. My point is, people rightly feel that way, okay? Because it makes no difference, except for a handful of politicians. And I will predict for you that the NRA will lose this battle, because the agenda is already set. Just like the agenda was set for Obama's health care, that is a program that usually benefited the health care industry, is really the program that they wanted as a way of appeasing us, the people. The NRA will lose. And I love to quote Thomas Jefferson, who said, "We all need to be armed as a last resort against tyranny." The empire and the establishment wants to de-arm the American people. So the progressives are going to help to de-arm the American people, just like the Tea Party, okay, supports all of the insane programs that they support. Okay, and many of those people are good people. So I'm talking about not the people, but I'm talking about the money-powered interest behind the propaganda on both, in some cases, the left as well as certainly the right. So we have to take – we don't need to write our congressmen. We need to find congressmen that will work for us because they believe in us and not the corporations, and we need to put them in office. That's the mind shift that we need to take. Stop writing our congressmen and find a congressman that will really represent us.
Well, we need to do that too, and that's, you know, that's a lot of what PDA is involved in as well. You know, this is not an either-or proposition. I, you know, when unfortunately, when nothing has actually worked in terms of accomplishing our goals, it's very easy for us to say, oh, well, this doesn't work and that doesn't work, you know. But in fact, yes, I mean, I agree with you, but that does, you know, it's no good for us to, to each come up with our own idea of what's going to work and then do it on our own. You know, we need to do what you just said, and you need to do what I just said. And if we all do that together, you know, then we have some chance of success.
Thank you.
I agree. And what kind of messaging are we doing on March 19th? I know there are activities all over the country. And, you know, I believe it's the cost of wars that makes the most, is the most influential argument against this out-of-control military spending. I mean, we were 10 years after the war in Iraq. Can we honestly say that anything positive came out of spending almost $1 trillion over there? And now they want to cut education and health care, Medicare, Social Security. For what? You know, these leaders that led us into these wars and continued them, you know, why do we keep electing people that do these things? And I think that plays into your frustration about, you know, what we're doing isn't working. Well, we have to get the people's attention somehow so that they don't keep voting in these people, and we do have to offer them alternatives. So I think you're right about that, alternatives that are truly an alternative.
And to the cost of the wars, the Eisenhower Report said the all-in cost of the wars will be $4 to $6 trillion by the time we're done paying for them. And the Wall Street Journal, on a separate subject, had 19 companies agreed to disclose how much money they'd saved by taking their profits offshore, their revenues offshore. And 19 of 60 companies in the Wall Street Journal made a disclosure. There was $98 billion in additional taxes that they would have paid if they hadn't used the loopholes to go offshore. That's $98 billion in 1 year. That's more than the $85 billion of sequester cuts that were being put into place. So the solutions are there. The media doesn't even really talk about them. And so I agree with all of you. We've got to fight on every front. But I think we've got to escalate the fight to taking people out of office and putting in people in office that are responsive of the people. And on that basis, the left has got to unite with the right, because we are not divided. On core values, we should all be united. And the left-right, conservative, Republican, Democratic divide is a false divide that will keep us away from taking back power for us, we the people. So I just think that's something I'm not hearing a lot, and I think we got to change how we talk and look at taking back our country. And I rest my case on that point. Thank you.
Well, I absolutely agree with you, and I can honestly say that when Rand Paul got up for that sequester for the in Congress and spoke the filibuster, you know, I applauded him online on Facebook and spent half a day being bombarded with people accusing me of being pro Tea Party. I said, no, let's not shoot the messenger. The guy was doing a good thing by that filibuster. The fact that he's not a Democrat didn't matter a bit to me. You know, I believe that was a good thing what he did. And it's that kind of just knee-jerk reaction to he's not a Democrat, so we don't like what he does, that we're fighting against also.
Yes.
And that's something each of us has to work on individually with people that we come in contact with. And I think that's a major problem right now. You know, they just label it Democrat or Republican, and they don't get to the real heart of what the problem is.
We can't
let that go by, you know, unchallenged. So it really, that's part of our problem, is we have to challenge and keep talking about what we believe in, regardless of
the political parties, what they're doing, you know. So any other suggestions out there, and what other activities are going on for March 19th for the anniversary of the Iraq War?
Well, I, you know, in my article that I wrote for that, you know, the two things I stressed were calling for accountability, that one day the people responsible for this need to be charged and prosecuted. And secondly, like Iraq Veterans Against the War, you know, I think we should be calling for war reparations to Iraq as a collective responsibility that we all share for what was done in our name. So if people are doing things on March 19th for the 10th anniversary of the crime of aggression that we committed against Iraq, I think those are very legitimate demands, that we call for prosecuting American war criminals, all for the payment of reparations to Iraq.
All right, that's good. Any other comments here?
This is Rob. Yeah, we're holding a vigil to remember all the lives that were lost in the war. We're doing it with Peace Action and Vets for Peace and the Overpass Light Brigade. And we're going to have a message that's going to be over I-94 going through the city of Milwaukee, which we haven't actually settled on what the actual message is, but it'll have to do with something Iraq war-centric, you know, to remember the mistakes that we made.
Okay. Anybody else want to report on an action happening in their area?
Yeah, well, I think we're going to, you know, really since the Iraq War began, we've held vigils here in North Miami, in front of City Hall, in front of our local contemporary art museum, and basically just a candlelight vigil, a time, you know, it's pretty hard to get people out on the street in Miami for anything, but, there was at one point, I think we had about 150 people out there, and that was probably at the height of the war. But, yeah, it's definitely something to ask people to reflect on, you know. It's just an incredible, massive loss of life, you know, probably more than 1 million people killed as a result of something that was a complete violation of the United Nations Charter. And, you know, really just a crime. Exactly, you know, the same crime that we prosecuted people for at Nuremberg. For the same reason. As the judges at Nuremberg said, you know, that aggression is the supreme international crime, and differing only from other war crimes in that it contains within itself the accumulated evil of the whole. All the other horrors that were visited on Iraq during, you know, 8 or 10 years of occupation, stemmed from that act of aggression, of thinking that, you know, we could just invade another country, unleash, you know, the most powerful military force in history against the people of Iraq, who'd already suffered under 10 years of sanctions. And, those 29,000 airstrikes in that first month probably killed tens of thousands of women and children And yet that has been completely brushed under the carpet and not acknowledged, let alone recognized as a crime.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here in Phoenix, Arizona, we have a military contractors convention on this Thursday, the 14th. So that's when we're doing our major action, protesting the cost, the continually rising cost of military, you know, taking up way too much of our budget. So that, believe me, the Jobs Not Wars resources are coming in very handy right now for us. I'd like to thank that campaign for having a great website to go to for resources, and also National Priorities Project. So we're about to the end of the hour. If anybody else has any other announcements, you can make them now.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
I'm Carolyn from Palm Springs, and I was wondering if anybody is participating in some way in Cindy Sheehan's Tour de Peace that begins in April. She's going to be passing through Palm Springs on April 9th, and she's going to be traveling across country to the White House and then to Arlington, I guess, in memory of her son, Casey. But is anybody else interested in that? You know, she's against the war. That's the whole point of her tour, is for peace. And
She is coming through Phoenix. I know that. And I do believe that some, I'm also involved in Code Pink, but some other Code Pink members here are trying to work out an event when she passes through Phoenix.
Good.
So, yes, we're working on that also.
Good. Nobody else?
Anybody else?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Carolyn. All right. Any other announcements?
Just if any of you are not on the PDA and Warren application Google group, go to Google group and sign up to join it. It's under PDA. I think it still says PDA and the Iraq occupation. But please sign up and join the Google group and let's stay in touch.
All right.
Hey, hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. I did have a comment I wanted to make. This is Tad Daly.
Okay.
I'm sorry that I joined the call about halfway through. And it's the first time I've joined a call in a couple of years. I was with PDA at the very beginning. But, yeah, and I actually went to the Progressive Central on inauguration weekend, and that got me re-enthused about PDA.
Welcome.
So if I may, I just thank you. I just wanted to kind of offer sort of a substantive point that I think it's important for us to make, specifically with regard to the March 19th 10-year anniversary of the Iraq War. And that is that I guess I want us to offer a broader critique, not just of war in general, but specifically of this notion that when dictators are really, really bad, that means that we have the right to just go in and overthrow them. There is obviously still, 10 years on, quite a debate about whether the Iraq War was a good or a bad thing. I mean, most of us think it was a bad thing, but there are people on the other side, and most of those people on the other side, they say, well, Saddam Hussein was a very, very bad man. And I guess it's especially relevant, it seems to me, when it comes to the Libya episode, which I guess is just about 2 years ago. It was, in fact, March of 2011 that our operation against Libya began. And there seems to be almost a unanimity among most informed Americans that, well, that was a good thing to do because Muammar Gaddafi was a very bad man and all we had to do was deploy air power. We didn't have to occupy the country and put American soldiers at risk. And I guess I just want us, the forces on the left who are really critiquing the war machine and the war system, to say that, yes, of course we concede that Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi and Bashar Assad, is that the guy's name? You know, he's the latest one, are bad people and bad dictators. And clearly not terribly legitimate figures. But we need some other system in the world for addressing those kinds of dictators other than the United States solely appointing itself as judge and jury and executioner. I want us to challenge the notion that it's up to America to decide which dictators should stay and which dictators should go. So I hope that was somewhat of a coherent point. And again, it's a bit of a broader point to make beyond just it's the 10-year anniversary of the Iraq War, and we think that was a stupid, foolish, immoral, and illegal decision. I think there's at least one general principle there that I'd like us to make as part of our broader messaging.
Well, the general principle there is actually the upholding of international law. I mean, the UN Charter actually prohibits doing what we did. And, of course, when it came to Libya, we got a UN Security Council resolution approving a no-fly zone, and then, you know, ostensibly to protect civilians, and then we conducted 7,700 airstrikes, and special forces on the ground to lead what people referred to as the NATO rebels across Syria, and the government that we have now installed there. Their best estimate, which is certainly a low estimate, is that 25,000 people were killed. So of course, this is why Russia and China will not approve any kind of such resolution to do with Syria, because they saw how that was abused. Under the guise of a resolution to protect civilians, you know, we bombed at least two Libyan cities into rubble, Sirte and Bani Walid, the last two sort of strongholds of the Gaddafi supporters, and there were Gaddafi supporters. There were a lot of people in Libya who did support him, just as there are a lot of people, probably, you know, about half the population in Syria who support Bashar al-Assad. But the bottom line is when the U.S. had, you know, was absolutely on top of the world in 1945, you know, Franklin Roosevelt came up with, you know, the idea of the UN Charter, you know, that we would actually prohibit the use of military force unless it was approved collectively by, you know, the UN Security Council. And so, you know, that's a very basic principle that, you know, that we need to ask our government to stick to from now on.
Okay, we're getting a lot of background noise. If somebody could mute their phone. Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to say, Tad Daly again here, thank you very much. The background noise may be me, so I'll mute as soon as I finish this little soliloquy. I'm in a New York City diner on 9th Avenue.
Okay.
But I really appreciated that addition to what I said, and I had forgotten until you mentioned that, yes, there was a UN resolution authorizing an operation for Libya, and it clearly wasn't a resolution that authorized what we did. It wasn't
right.
A resolution that said you can go in and overthrow the government of Libya.
Right.
And it's just, I am still, 2 years on, I'm just enraged that there seems to be almost no debate in the United States about whether that was a good thing to do. We got a UN resolution passed under entirely false pretenses, and then just clearly manipulated it and distorted it. As you say correctly, Russia and China are still pissed off about it. And I just think we as peace activists
they're not just pissed off, but they are now absolutely determined not to let that happen again.
Right.
So it's
right.
Not, you know, they're not just, you know, they're not getting mad. They're getting, you know, they're getting smart. And, you know, they gave us the benefit of the doubt there, and never again,
mm-hmm.
At least not for a while. But, this is a lot of the stuff that I write about. I write under my full name, which is Nicholas J.S. Davies, so you can Google me. you know, this is these issues just keep coming up.
All right, thank you. Well, our hour is up, so I want to thank everybody for being on the call. And please go out there and let's lobby our congressmen, get out in the streets and educate people, and certainly educate our fellow peace activists around us whenever we can. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Richard.
Hey, good night.
Good night.